Audit Committee meeting. Are there any corrections to the minutes which have been distributed? Do I hear a motion to approve the minutes of the Finance Commission Audit Committee meeting held on August 16 and 17, 2018?
So moved.
Second. Is there any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it, and the motion passes.
Would you announce that you're taking Molly's place? Oh, yes. Yes, I'm sorry. I should have announced I'm taking Molly Curl's place for this meeting. And I'm stepping in as the third to cover. The next order of business is the Audit Committee review of the agency activities. Charles, you want to go with the banking department?
Thank you. So on page 9, is that too loud?
They're up there a bit loud.
Okay.
I'll talk early.
So on the top of page 9, the Garza Gonzalez audit, for that part, we are complete. Maybe I don't need it.
Yeah, I don't.
Y'all can't hear me in the back. Somebody.
Will it record, though, if it's not on?
Oh, that's right.
Oops.
Volume is turned down a little bit. Echo.
We'll see how that goes. It's too loud still.
If you're not speaking, it will turn yours off, then you don't get the echo quite as much.
Okay, then on the second part, the little second outline on the Sunset Advisory Commission report on our complaint process, there was a criticism of that, and it is ongoing. Our goal is to have the rule ready for the December Finance Commission meeting. We had a Department of Information Resources did a penetration test on us. They were unable to get into the system. I believe the report is forthcoming. And then we're having a special analysis by DIR, and they've subcontracted out to AT&T that to perform a risk assessment. And that is completed, but we have not received the report as yet. So we should have that for you next meeting. So that's all we have, Madam Chair.
Caroline? Yes, for savings and mortgage lending on page 10, the Sunset Review, there are two recommendations. One is to develop an updated complaint process in rule. We're in the preliminary stages of looking at that. That's due September 1, 19. And then with regard to updating the penalty matrix, we've done our first run-through on that. We're looking at that again to tweak it and make sure that it follows what Sunset has asked us to do. That is due May 19th, so we'll have it to you at the April meeting. Garza Gonzalez's internal audit on thrift supervision, all recommendations have been completed. And comptroller's post-payment and procurement audit. Field work was completed in May, as we've reported to you before. We have not yet received the report. Those are the outstanding audit issues. Also, just a heads up, we've received notice that Workforce Commission will be coming in April.
Okay. Thanks. Lisa?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My report begins on page 11. So you'll see the first item is the Garza Gonzalez report from August that you had previously, you heard at your last meeting. There were two recommendations from that report. One of those items has been completed. The other one is in progress. It's a longer-term project that we'll have to do some programming for, but that's in progress, and you'll see the date there. The next item relates to some of the one of the management actions for Sunset Review that related exclusively to the OCCC. There were some that related to kind of all three agencies that I don't have on this list, but this item was to publish enforcement orders online. We began that for orders completed as of September 1, 2018. Those have been posted, so that grouping is now complete. That just happened since the time of publication of the book. So we consider that to be complete because we'll be publishing those every month going forward. And then the post-payment audit I've been telling you the committee about for a while, that the comptroller's did the field work last fall. We got the report in September, and you'll see the three items there. One in the prior state service verification, they wanted us to do a full reporting of those items. We, as of 9:30, we were 87.5% complete. Right now, we only have one file remaining, so that's very close to being fully completed. The second item was completed by August 31st. And then the last item is sort of an ongoing item that they continue to cite really for small agencies about segregation of duties. We certainly continue in progress. We made a number of changes to try to still further separate items. But sometimes when you have a small staff, you've got to have somebody be the backup. And so we're going to talk to the comptroller about if there's any other edit controls that they can put on some of the USAS system, but that system's pretty old, and there's just no way around it. But we'll have one more discussion with them about whether there's anything else we can do. And then on page 12 are the future items. One is the Texas Workforce Commission notified us of a personnel policies and procedures review, which is scheduled for March the 12th. Obviously, we're in the process of going through the internal audit risk assessment. That's in progress. And then one other item that Commissioner Cooper reminded me of when he made his report is we are scheduled for a DIR AT&T security assessment that's scheduled to begin in December. And that would be a copy on page 13 is just the link to the comptroller post-payment audit report. There's very tight controls in that report that weren't able to carry forward the upload the particular copy, but there's the link to that copy. But I've summarized the findings for you in the report. So, anyway, that concludes my outstanding audit items.
Okay, thank you. The next item is a discussion of and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the agency's August 31, 2018 investment officers' reports. Texas Banking. We'll go first.
Okay, thank you. So ours begins on page 15. It is the recap of the trust-funded prepaid funeral guarantee fund for the quarter. You will see the ending amount after some what I'm going to call it normal activity is $1,334,000. And you can see where that money is held. And then items 1 and items 2 are the increases and decreases. And, again, I'm going to call this activity normal. Any questions on any specific items? Then if you'll turn to page 16, it is the insurance-funded funeral guarantee fund, and that fund is much smaller, as we talked before. The balance ends up $553,000. It certainly has just normal activity there. And then on page 17, it would be the C's prepaid funeral funds. It a small amount, $3,800. And there is some detail below. This is something that has been in the press recently, at least in Austin. And it's still, we had to seize the records of a funeral company here, and it's called Peel & Sons here in Austin. It got a lot of press, and I think press is still pending, if you will. So we may hear some more about it, and I think our general counsel will talk a little bit more about it in her part in the other meeting, the whole Finance Commission meeting. Any questions about that? Again,
would you rather I hold my question for that till after her presentation? Would that be easier?
That probably would. But bottom line, the company had very little money, so we only seized $3,800. So there's going to some consumers are going to be out some money.
Yeah.
And that's all we have.
Okay. Thank you.
Caroline? Okay. Savings and mortgage lending is on page 18. This is the statutory mortgage recovery fund investment report. We updated this format to be more consistent with the other two agencies, thinking that might be helpful to you all. Mm-hmm. So this is the report. and the department's investment policies were followed in this investment activity.
Leslie?
Okay, thank you. On page 19 begins the two investment officer reports for the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner. The first page is the Residential Mortgage Loan Originator Recovery Trust Fund. This is a small recovery fund, normal activity in that fund for the fourth quarter of fiscal year 18. And then on page 20 is the Financial Education Endowment Fund. And you'll see the reflection of a number of activities within that fund. But again, normal actions, the actions that the Finance Commission took are reflected in there. The fund continues to grow. It's doing well. And so we've been actively working on issues and ensuring that we're maintaining compliance with policies and so on and so forth. But fund's in good shape.
Good. Thank you. Do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the agency's August 31, 2018 investment officer reports?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it, and the motion passes. The next item is the discussion and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the agency's 2018 fourth quarter financial statements.
The banking department starts on page 21. Sammy, would you come down and introduce yourself for the record? Just to, everybody knows this, but we're talking about the last quarter, but it also shows the year end, the yearly number, so it's a pretty good thing to look at.
Good morning. Sammy Chadley, Department of Banking. On page 21, as mentioned, is our operating statement for the period ending August 2018. For the quarter, revenues were at 54.5% of budget, and for the year, they were at 92.1%, and expenditures for the quarter were at 83.4% of budget and at 92.3% for the year. On pages 22 and 23 are our variance explanations. I'm going to go over five items. The first one, bank and trust regulation, our revenues for that category were less than budgeted due to the reduction in the fourth quarter. Bank assessments of 63.3% or approximately $3.8 million. Year-to-date, bank and trust regulation revenue is at 90.5% of budget and was adequate to cover all direct and indirect costs for the bank and trust area. Second item, non-bank regulation. Actual revenues were less than budgeted due to forgiven fourth quarter assessments. The year-to-date non-bank regulation revenue is at 100.8% of budget and was also adequate to cover all direct and indirect costs for that area, for the special audits area. Next is our classified salaries and employee benefits. We had a positive variance for that category, and that's related to vacant staff positions. We had four administrative vacancies and 10 examiner vacancies. The next item is other operating. I just want to point out that the large year-to-date variance is due to the ongoing elevator and boiler project that headquarters is going through, and that project is managed by the Texas Facilities Commission. And then lastly, on page 23, under capital, other IT expenditures, we had a negative variance, and that was due to higher pricing that projected for three servers that we acquired. Any questions so far?
Yes, I actually have two questions. So going back to page 22 at the top, the mm-hmm. bank and trust regulation. Mm-hmm. So if I remember correctly, what we're doing is we lowered what the fees are to the banks?
No.
Okay, so explain that to me then.
No, so we forgave assessments at the end of the fourth quarter. So there were some there were quarterly assessments to the banks. And for that quarter, those were not assessed to the banks.
Okay, again, for a layperson, explain to me why we didn't do the assessment.
So basically the budget is that what we collect should match what we expend it. So if we collected more, the $3.8 million, then we'll have more than what we actually need to run the department. So it's a cost recovery.
So let me help you with that a little bit. Hopefully, we've had, and this was discussed at the, it was kind of a criticism by Sunset, and if you recall when we did the budget process this time, we kind of changed our method where we tried to fine-tune that number in the fourth quarter, historically in the fourth quarter, and then sometimes in the third quarter. If we knew we were collecting more money than we needed, we would reduce the assessments. And this budget for 19, the best thing I can call it is we tried to fine-tune that number where it wouldn't be as much as it has been historically. Because we really had a criticism from Sunset. All agencies had that criticism. So we don't expect that to recur in 19 unless something unusual happens. We get more banks, or the banks get bigger and our assessments get bigger. It's a forecast. We expect to probably have some forgiveness or lower assessments in the fourth quarter, but we don't think it'll be as much as it has been.
Okay, so again, we budget a certain assessment, but then going into the fourth quarter, we realize we didn't need that much money to run our organization, so we lower the assessment to the banks by this difference? I'm sorry, I'm just not getting
it. That's roughly it. It's not that we didn't need it. At the beginning, we thought we needed it, but we didn't utilize it. Or our revenues were higher than we projected.
Okay.
And it's, you know, it is, historically, it's, well, I'm going to say it's been a good tool. And when we, I'm going to use the word forgive instead of reduce. But if we reduce the assessments in the fourth quarter, our banks generally have appreciated that. But we're fine-tuning it. We're going to be closer in 19 than we have been before.
All right. Then second question, different subject. Of the 10 examiners we were short of, how many slots do we have for examiners? Roughly.
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Okay.
Around 100.
About 10% short.
Right.
That's what I'm
saying. And also in that area, we changed our method. We have always, probably since the recession, we tried to hire some experts, some people in the industry, and so we had that number in there. We failed to be able to hire all the ones we wanted, and so that's really the excess. This, in 2018, we also had retirements, probably more than we've had before, and so that created the problem. This time, on the next budget cycle, we took those experts at a larger number and basically said, we're going to hire at the bottom and grow our own, because we just weren't getting the experts we needed.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Next, on page 24 is our liquidity report, and basically showed an unreserved cash balance of 2.41 months, which is within the best practice of 2 to 6 months. Questions?
Any questions for Sammy? Thank you.
Thanks, Sammy.
All right, thank you.
Caroline?
Yes, thank you. For savings and mortgage lending, Antonia Antoff is going to join us and give the report.
Good morning. Antonia Antoff, savings and mortgage lending. Our fourth quarter report begins on page 25. We have an explanation of the variances on page 26. I just wanted to note that our overall revenues are at 17% over budget. If we exclude the penalties, which are not budgeted for, our revenues are at 8.6% over budget. Our overall expenditures are at 100% of budget. The expenditures include two unbudgeted items, a retirement lump sum of $53,000 and our agency's portion of the elevator boiler replacement of $2,008,000. Without these items, we would be at 96% of expenditures. And I'd be happy to answer any questions on the fourth quarter. Our liquidity report is located on page 27. Our overall unreserved cash balance at the end of fiscal year 18 is $4.8 million. $3 million of that amount is our penalties collected in the last 4 years, from fiscal year 15 through 18, that were not budgeted for. The rest, $1.8 million, is an accumulated excess from operations. On page 28 are our cash reserves charts. The cash reserve months by quarter chart shows that if we exclude the amounts of the collected penalties, our cash reserve would be at less than 3 months. These penalties are all mortgage-related penalties, and they include significant amounts of penalties for unlicensed activity. During the last 2 years, we have given back over $2.5 million to our licensees in the mortgage industry by reducing license fees. We have included some additional charts in this packet. The chart on page 29 compares our cash reserves between fiscal year 17 and fiscal year 18. As of the beginning of both years, we were at 12 and a half months of reserves. However, at the end of 18, we are at 8.7, which is a decrease of almost 2 months compared to 10.4 as of the end of fiscal year 17. On page 30, we have included charts showing the cyclical nature of both our industries that I talked about a few meetings ago. During the last several years, as you can see, we have been in an upward trend. On page 31 is our projected changes in liquidity report. As of the end of fiscal year 18, the excess amount over our 6-month requirement is just under $1.5 million. We propose a contribution to TIFI of $750,000 that will bring down our reserves to 7.3 months. After we account for the budgeted deficit in fiscal year 19, there will be a $343,000 in excess. Our plan is to propose additional actions for this and any additional accumulated excess not later than July in 2019 in order to become compliant with the policy. That will give us the opportunity to see how the licensing renewals will go in the first and second quarter of fiscal year 19 and what amounts of licensing revenues and penalties will be collected. We're also doing our due diligence on a couple of projects that we may need to amend the fiscal year 19 budget in order to expend additional funds or reserve the funds for fiscal year 20. And I'll be happy to answer any questions. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
The Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner report begins on page 32. Unfortunately, Christina Cuellar, our hope, was unable. She's ill this morning, unable to be with us, so I'll give the report for the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner today. So you'll see the operating statement and budget analysis on page 32 for the fourth quarter of fiscal year 18. I believe you all also got emails with the formal annual financial reports for the each of the agencies previously, as those were prepared and submitted October the 1st. But the report is on page 32. In terms of the variances, you'll see revenues were at 104.3% of the budget, and expenditures were at 95.3%. In terms of revenues, the motor vehicle industry revenue was below the forecast. That was due to a planned-for discount that we were able to increase a bit at the end of fiscal year 19 because, again, we wanted to – same issue that discussed earlier, that's always been the plan. We don't want to have excess collections, and so we were license by license, it wasn't a significant amount, but that did drive the total number under the budget. The penalties and late fees, you'll see that reflected there, $369,000. That's only 9% of that, about 10% of that is penalties. The rest of it was just late filing fees from items that were not filed on time. Another significant item in the revenue side was the interest income. It was significantly larger this year from prior years, just rising rates. So we'll certainly incorporate that as part of our forecast going forward. Moving on to expenditures, our salaries and wages were 94.1% of the projected budget. These were due primarily to vacancies and turnover. We did fill a good slot, a majority of those positions in September. We got another class, I think, of examiners we're hoping to fill in October. or early November probably. So we're making progress, at least in that issue going forward, but that's what those were due to. You already heard about building and utilities. And then item 12 and 13 that are noted on the variances, that's other operating and acquisition of information technology. We were able to make some improvements in our security software and obtaining some cybersecurity tools that we had not initially planned to, but they became available to us, and we chose to move on those to try to help ensure that we're doing everything we can to maintain security. On page 35 is our liquidity report, and you'll see the unreserved cash for over the monthly budget references 7.29 months. Presently, this is a high point in our revenue collection cycle because we've just been through motor vehicle renewals. You'll see Christina presented for you the where it was the prior quarter. So it was at 5.3 in the prior quarter. So we'll continue to keep you updated on that. And that's all the financial report for the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner.
Thank you, Leslie. Do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the agency's 2018 fourth quarter financial statements?
I guess that's my job.
That's your job, Vince.
Yes.
Thank you, Vince. Is there a second?
Yes, second.
Thanks, Stacy. Any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motions have it, the ayes have it, and the motion is passed. The next item is a discussion of and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on an additional Finance Commission audit to be provided under the current internal audit contract. And Charles is going to take the lead on this discussion.
If y'all remember during the sunset process, I don't know how we could forget, but there was a criticism of the agencies not acting together on several, coming together and doing some things jointly, if you will, or working together. And even though we disagreed with some of their criticisms, it was decided that we should have someone come in and kind of do a third-party review of that. And so the contract process and the contract itself allowed us to increase the McConnell and Jones contract to cover this. And after doing some internal analysis, we are recommending that McConnell and Jones do that work, and they're here to go over it. And so I guess we have Mr. Lanier and Darlene Brown here, so turn it over to y'all.
No,
we have Gilbert. Gilbert's
here.
Oh, Gilbert. I'm sorry, Gilbert.
Correct.
We'll introduce each other later.
I'm Darlene Brown, for the record. Mr. Lanier could not make it. He was in Washington, D.C. yesterday, and his flight was late, so he couldn't get here this morning. He was planning on being here, though. I did bring Gilbert Hopkins with me. He will actually be the primary person on this engagement. I'll let Gilbert introduce himself.
Yes, Gilbert Hopkins. I'm a director with McConnell Jones, and I'm happy to be mistaken for the old D.C. Senator.
And the fourth person on our team is Katiana Terrell. She has 10 years experience in internal audit and process improvements. So we intentionally put together a different team than the internal audit team that you approved and met through the last commission meeting. And the reason we've done that is because we want to keep as much segregation between the internal audit team and this efficiency audit as possible. Now, I'm on the team still because so we can leverage everything that we've learned from the risk assessment process and make this efficiency audit process more efficient and save your staff from having to repeat everything they've already told us. So I'm going to hand this over to Gilbert so he can talk about how he proposes to approach this engagement, and then I'll wrap it up with a timeline.
Thank you, darling. Good morning, everyone. I'm happy to have this opportunity and to be able to serve the Texas Finance Commission once again. I say that because 20 years ago, the predecessor firm to McConnell & Jones conducted a statewide study of consumer depository and cash services for the Texas Finance Commission. The purpose of that study was to assess the impact that cash, check cashing services, payday loans, and money order services have on low-income populations in Texas. And the purpose was to determine how those populations could be educated and prepared for emerging banking services, and also to determine how expensive those services were for low-income populations and the impact that they had on their financial literacy. The outcome of the project was that these populations needed to be better educated and provided financial literacy education so that they could be prepared for these emerging banking services and how those emerging services could be made more affordable. So fast forward to today, we're doing another project for the Finance Commission, and I'm happy to be a part of it. On this particular project, if I could direct your attention to the placemat, I think I always like visuals. I'm a visual person. I always like visuals. I think that these, if you can look at the interlocking circles, it gives you a sort of bird's eye view of how we plan to approach this project, given that the objective of the project is to find synergies between the three organizations and what processes, what activities, what functions within the three organizations could potentially be combined, could potentially be streamlined, optimized, with the intent to eliminate duplicative services without sacrificing quality, how we can leverage technology, and how we can improve efficiencies. And so what we'll do is we'll come in and we'll look at where these interlocking circles interconnect. And so if you look at the diagram, you'll see the bubbles within the circles. Those bubbles represent business functions, activities, processes, what you all do in order to accomplish your core purpose. We'll look at those across all three agencies. One of the first things we'll do, and part of what Darlene is doing now with the risk assessment, is understanding what the purpose of the Finance Commission is. Once we understand your business, then we'll come in and look and say, okay, where are the interlocking functions? Where are the common functions? Where are the overlapping functions? We'll accomplish this by, first of all, having a workshop where we'll have a sort of discussion about the various purposes, the activities, the functions, sub-processes. There are going to be six basic functions that we'll look at. And within those basic functions, we're sure there'll be sub-processes that we'll need to look at. Those basic functions being budget and accounting, complaint intake, financial literacy programs, human resources, information technology, and then purchasing and procurement. And from those workshops, we'll take that information and we'll develop a comprehensive and detailed questionnaire that we will deploy to the various business and process owners within the three organizations. We'll use that questionnaire, the responses from that questionnaire, then to develop targeted interview questions. We'll go in and ask targeted questions about, you know, what's done, who does it, the who, what, where, when, and how of the sub-processes. And from all of that information, then, we'll be able to identify where the how the organization can optimize resources, how functions can be combined, how duplicate functions and processes can be eliminated, how expenditures can be managed, better managed, and decreased, and how efficiencies can be identified and improved. And all of that without sacrificing, hopefully, experience and quality. So that's what that's sort of a bird's eye view of our approach and methodology, and we're looking forward to executing it.
It's important to note that we understand that each agency has uniquenesses, and so those uniquenesses will represent these outliers in the bubbles that won't be combined or suggested for consolidation or changes. Okay, so if you would like to turn your placemat over, we have a high-level work plan on how we're going to accomplish it and then the timeline. And if Gilbert wants to walk through what the objective is for each one of these really quickly and then the activities that we plan to execute to accomplish those objectives.
Madam Chair, may I ask a question or two at this time?
Sure.
So Stacy's getting tired of me saying this, but I'm going to say it again. I spent a career in large organizations with a shared services component where you had this sort of activity. And
count me as a skeptic that we can actually do two things well. One is continue to assure that we provide our consumer groups with the needs that they're met, which I think we do well now, while at the same time not focusing on the cost to achieve the sort of savings that you're going to do. Because I don't want to spend a lot of money to consolidate organizations where the service to the customers don't improve. So I sort of need to get my head around how we're going to do this in a way that, you know, at the end of the process it may be cheaper, but we spend a bunch of money so that we don't actually ever save anything. So help me understand how we're going to think about cost to achieve if we're going to put these things together.
So one of the activities that we will be doing is, say, let's just take human resources, for example. If human resources was to be one of those activities that we say could be consolidated, then we also run an impact analysis on how much is it going to cost for additional technology changes, for potential staffing changes, and how much versus how much you might save. And if those savings or the increased efficiencies or increased customer service or even enhanced internal controls, if those can't be achieved, if you don't get greater in any one of those for the cost that it's going to occur to consolidate, then the recommendation would not be to consolidate those.
Okay, I like this placemat idea. Where on the placemat did we have that analysis you just described?
On number 4 on the back that Gilbert hasn't gotten to yet.
Okay.
The first check mark on number 4 under the objective. So it's what is the potential impact if the processes were to be consolidated, financial, human resources, process information, technology, and service quality. And in order for us to achieve that objective, we're going to analyze and triangulate the information that we've gathered. We'll also perform some benchmarking, and then we're going to assess the fiscal impact.
I would not, just reading this cold, I would not have concluded that that check mark addresses the concern that I have.
Understood.
So I'd appreciate, when the result of this process is done, I'm going to ask these questions again, and so I want to make sure that we've highlighted the issue of cost to achieve and the ultimate result to make sure that we are not spending a bunch of money and not really getting any improvement.
Correct. What we anticipate in laying out in the report for you would be like a matrix that would say this is the function, this is the part of the function that we're anticipating to be consolidated or revised, and this is the cost and timeline, this is the impact that it would have, and this is your potential savings.
Madam Chair, I forget which one I'm looking at.
That's okay. Look at both.
They're both madam, though. That's great. Since we're interrupting the presentation anyway, the thing that pops in my mind, we've got the legislative session coming up. The sunset ruling will come at that point. Hopefully, we do not dissolve or merge the two of our departments. But if that's the case, it seems like this is all null and void then. And it seems like spending $24,000 at this point, not knowing whether or not that action is going to occur or not, seems like poor timing, at least on the surface to me.
So from our standpoint, that's a prospective future recommendation at this point, at best. And given where we stand from the most recent action, the vote was in our favor, 9-3, to continue the three agencies as they are. So given that, and I just pulled this up because I thought it might help, and I apologize, first, for interrupting your presentation, but secondly, for probably not properly framing the conversation that we're having here. And that is, in the sunset recommendation of the executive report, what was actually approved was direct the Finance Commission to minimize duplication of agency functions and promote more cost-effective administration of the finance agencies. So given that, We then have to look at our statute and follow our statutes. And our statute on sharing of staff, equipment, facilities, and allocation of costs, and I apologize for reading this, but I don't know it by heart, is the Finance Commission shall use the staff, equipment, and facilities of the finance agencies to the extent necessary to carry out the Finance Commission's duties. To reduce administrative cost, the finance agencies shall share staff, equipment, and facilities to the extent that the sharing contributes to cost efficiency without detracting from staff expertise needed for individual areas of responsibility. So given that, that's the framework that we're working within today. And it's our responsibility as commission members to operate the agency as it exists today rather than predicting a potential future event. And our contract's in place for this. So we felt like, given the timeline, and I don't mean to steal any of your thunder there, so sorry about that. The goal was to get this report in time so that it was during legislative session so that we would have this potentially as we work through Sunset. So this is a tool and resource in addition to helping us potentially streamline or improve operations if there are areas of improvement, if that answers your question.
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Tracy, for clarifying that.
This is great dialogue. It's better to get the questions as we proceed, so hopefully you don't feel like you're interrupting our presentation.
I can go through the objectives on the back side of the placemat. Before objectives, basically, I can pretty much run through these fairly quickly. First of all, the first objective would be to ask the question, you know, what makes each of the separate entities unique, first of all, because we don't want to touch those areas. If there are things Department of Banking is doing that only the Department of Banking can do that's unique to the Department of Banking, those areas would be outside of the interlocking circles. We wouldn't look at those. So we ask that question, what makes each organization unique? And then what are management's concerns with respect to, like Mr. Plunkett indicated earlier, we'll want to make sure we get our arms around what those concerns are. And that'll be one of the purposes of the workshop that we'll do. We'll hear and get feedback because that will inform our subsequent activities. That'll be one of the activities that we'll perform to achieve objective one. And objective two, what are the processes? What processes are performed for each function? How are they performed? Who performs them? What is the transaction volume? How often is it performed? So this is the what, when, who, how, where. What we'll do to accomplish this objective is we'll have a questionnaire for process owners to complete, and we'll use that questionnaire as the basis for subsequent, more detailed, focused interviews. The third objective is what performance measures are associated with the process, if any, and what and who is dependent upon the output of the process, and what is common about those processes. Now we're starting to laser in to see where there may be some synergies or some similarities among the processes. And so we'll look at data here. This is where we do our data analysis in terms of looking at performance reports, management reports, and examining dependencies, commonalities, and uniquenesses of the processes under review. And then finally, four, what is the potential impact if the process was to be consolidated? And we're looking at, the financial impact, what is the impact on the organization in terms of its ability to fulfill its core mission? Are there other alternatives or improvements if consolidation is not a viable solution? What steps would need to be taken for consolidation to occur? And then what is the financial impact if resource sharing or consolidation is determined to be a viable option? And in doing that, what we do then is we triangulate all of the information that we've gathered through interviews, questionnaires, data analysis. Then we will also perform benchmarking analysis internally as well as industry standard best practices to the extent possible. And then we'll assess these impacts for each recommendation that we make. For our fiscal impacts, we'll project a 5-year fiscal impact if there are any fiscal impacts that we determine are necessary. And then finally, we'll prepare a draft and final report with our recommendations and conclusions. And so that's a sort of a general overview of our approach. And, of course, you know, all of this is developed from the perspective of being outside of the organization looking in. Of course, once we get inside and we start interviewing and speaking with people, some of this may change. You know, we may tweak some of this and make it more realistic based upon what we find on the ground. But this is generally how we plan to approach the project and how we plan to achieve these objectives.
Okay, so we plan on starting with our planning activities in the week of October 29th. And the reason we start then is because we will have wrapped up the risk assessment and all that documentation, and we can leverage that to say, okay, here's where we see on the surface some potential similarity, and here's where we see some differences, and here's where we're going to now target in. What's really key is during the week of November 12th, we had planned to hold these two workshops that we've discussed. And we may even, depending on individuals' calendars, may even be able to consolidate that with meetings that we're already holding with the three commissions to go over the risk assessment. So we'll work that out flexible. But the biggest thing is that we're going to allow staff 2 to 3 weeks to complete these questionnaires. And the questionnaires are detailed about how do you do the process, what makes it so unique, who's involved, what are the inputs, and what are the outputs. So they're going to need some time to complete those questionnaires and hopefully be able to complete them as they're doing that particular function. And then if we can get everything back within that 2 to 3 weeks, then we can complete the whole project and issue the final report by October 26th. Now, you will see that we intend to have a closing workshop on March the 5th with the commissioners, the three commissioners, to go over our potential recommendations. And if there are not any considerable major pushbacks or discussions where we need to go back and look at some things some more, we can actually even get that draft, the final report, out to you sooner than April the 26th. You can see that we're giving ourselves a month to go back and retweak and do some revisiting if needed.
So I have another question for you.
Sure.
Assume with me for a second that we find a particular activity that should be consolidated. And so let's say, for example, it is consumer complaint intake. So would your recommendation also include the organizational structure and management structure for how we do that? So would there be a consumer intake department, and who would it report to, and would it have contracts with each of the agencies? I mean, I don't quite understand how, you know, where we're going to figure out how to actually structure this process.
Correct.
At the end.
So our report would for any area that we just say it should be considered for consolidation, we are also going to suggest which agency it should be consolidated into, who should take the lead, what that shared service agreement components should be included, potential staffing levels that you would need to achieve it. And there was something else you asked me in those lines of questions.
Organizational.
Okay, the structure. I don't think we can actually develop you a true organizational structure because there's a lot of components that go into that. But for example, if we say information technology should be consolidated, and it looks like the Department of Banking has more mature and capabilities and systems already in place that would be make more sense to move everything to the Department of Banking for information technology, then we can say your information technology department needs to look like this. But we wouldn't be able to say this individual needs a transfer from this agency to Department of Banking because that's an internal decision that you would need to make on how that was going to be staffed. But we could tell you what the functions need to be in that department.
So would it include at least maybe not by name, but the number of employees that would no longer be needed?
Yes.
Okay. Another question. On page 37, the middle, list out the items that they're going to look at from complaint intake to purchasing and procurement. My question is, did the three commissioners come together and say, yeah, these are the areas we think could be combined, or is this strictly from the outside, from your firm?
This was the scope of work we were provided.
Sunset. Yes.
So do the three commissioners agree that these are possibilities or not?
Let me try that. I think even before during the sunset activity, the discussion, I think all three of us felt like that we could look at some things that could be consolidated, and they include all these areas. Now, and I believe we'll probably do it ourselves anyway, in addition to what they're doing. I agree with Commissioner Plunkett that I'm a little bit skeptic myself. But one of the things, I think that what you have proposed would makes a lot of sense. One of the things we did think about is this is a criticism, if you will, of us. And if we have a third party work done, whether we agree or disagree, because we can come back in and say, well, we agree with this or we disagree because of this, that probably helps us going forward. Validates or invalidates where we are. And if we disagree with something, I think we'll probably put it out there and the Finance Commission can make the decision.
Okay. Y'all at least, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, you at least agree that these items listed are considerations, possibilities.
Yes.
There's nothing here that just says, oh, I can't do HR because we're competing for examiners, for example. I mean, essentially, y'all are.
Well,
since y'all three of y'all are.
But it needs to be looked at, and that could be one of the reasons why we disagree if they made that recommendation.
Okay.
I also think that, and Liz and Caroline, y'all jump in if you want to. It could be an area that they find that maybe it costs, let's just say it costs $50,000 more than what it is now. But the service to citizens or our stakeholders is much better. I think we would all look at that. It's not just a cost number; it's an efficiency number. So I'm looking forward to the dialogue.
Thank you.
Chair, if I might add, the list that you have in the scope of work is actually in the Sunset Report.
Yeah.
The narrative of the Sunset Report. That's exactly what you listed that they wanted us
to look at
as well. So that's where we started.
Thanks, Stephanie.
And I guess I might ask a question. I have a little bit of a different question. I'm going to join the skeptics group because, generally speaking, I think we've probably thought of many of the things that we need to do that need to be done, but we hope that we come up with some insightful information, and certainly a third-party outside-looking-in perspective is of great assistance to us. With respect to, and let's just take as an example, like in this list, for example, let's take IT, because that's an easy thing to do. And let's say that we decided to consolidate servers and IT and everything, and then they would feed to each agency. And let's say that there's a recommendation that maybe incurs cost. It's more costly upfront to incur it, but would streamline efficiency and eventually be a cost savings. I assume you're going to be looking at those options as well?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there any more questions for Darlene or Gilbert? Do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve an additional Finance Commission audit to be provided under the current internal auditor contract?
Not to exceed $23,735.
That can be added.
Did I not submit?
We have a motion by Vince. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion by Stacy. Any more discussion? All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it, and the motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you so much,
y'all,
for your presentation. It was very helpful.
I need another placemat. This is
rough. You can have mine.
The next item is the discussion of and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending's contribution of $750,000 to the Texas Financial Education Endowment Fund. Caroline,
tee that up. Yes. As y'all may recall,
Are you okay?
Mold and ragweed, so I may be doing this all morning, but we'll try to as little as possible. Anyway, the $750,000 that we're recommending, these are funds that basically I want to start with talk a little bit about the reserves, because this contribution does two things. Well, three things, really. It certainly helps some of our penalties go back to consumers in the form of education, and which we do not have a structure within the agency to do that. We don't have any financial literacy or education authority. It also will help with our reserves. And so what I'd like to do is talk about the reserve piece, and then we'll talk more about the consumer piece as well. So the funds in those reserves are unplanned. And as you all know, in our plan, part of the plan that we provided to you all does have the future recommendations of contributions to TIFI. So those funds that are in the reserves are unplanned and are primarily from admin fines and penalties. They're not from the savings banks. They're from the mortgage industry for violations of laws and regulations. And many of those fines are from unlicensed activity. We don't budget for them. They're not predictable. So as you may recall, during our – and restitution numbers are not within those numbers as well. As you may recall, during our budgeting process, taking the cash reserves into consideration, we've been able to lower fees. So we've done that the last few years for licensees. And ultimately, that's assisted in the cash reserves. But what we have – as I said, what we're not able to do through our statutory structure for the agency is to have any benefit from these admin penalties go to the consumers, as I said, or educate the consumers. And so as our oversight board, the Finance Commission does have a structure, and it is TIFI. Through those grant programs, ultimately the financial education about mortgages gets to the Texas consumer. So when we first made a contribution to TIFI, I spoke with the AG's office, as you all may recall, to confirm that the statute allows TIFI to accept contributions from state agencies. Particularly, I asked specifically, what about a state agency under its purview? And the answer was yes. So we're recommending that Antonia talked more about the numbers earlier, but we're recommending that we make a contribution of $750,000 right now to TIFI. And again, partially to help consumers, partially to help the reserves. The reserves are will not be totally down to 6 months, but it certainly
So could you refresh our recollection about the source of the funds the first time that we did a contribution?
Very similar. They came from the reserves, and the reserves are partially operational, but largely through admin fines and penalties, which we don't budget for, and we can't predict what they're going to be.
Maybe I'm misremembering, but I thought there was a source that we got
the lawsuits.
Yes. Let me back up. Apologize. Back up. The first contribution of $500,000 was from a settlement, a lump sum settlement.
Right.
Yes, you're correct. And then within the next one, there may have been some other settlements as well. We've had a couple of other settlements. They weren't to the full, they weren't as large as that original $500,000 settlement. But you're correct. Within that is not only fines and penalties that we've ordered, but also a couple of settlements that have come down the road.
So what I was trying to figure out is whether this is a change from, you know, what I recollect was the discussion was this is a one-time, these were one-time funds, and we didn't know what to do with them, and so the solution was to contribute to the fund, and now it looks like it's has the potential for being an ongoing year in and year out situation, and so it'd be interesting to me to know what our options are rather than just coming up with one option. Are there, you know, are there a range of things we can do, and we can pick from the menu?
Sure. And to back up a little bit, that first contribution was from that one settlement. The next contribution had some settlement funds in it. I believe, am I correct about that, Antonio? Yes. We did mention then, though, that we would look again at the end of the year to see if there were more excess funds that we could contribute. The options of large uses of those reserves, and I'm going to let's call large six figures at one shot, are very limited. And I've got a copy of the plan that we had given y'all. I'll walk through that in a moment. To immediately reduce those, not sure how to say this, we can't stop ordering penalties, or we're not doing our job. So we know that we're going to continue getting those in. We don't know how much each year. But in terms of, let me.
Well, it's true that, I shouldn't say that. There is another option, which is to reduce assessments.
And yes, sir, and we have done that. We do that each year. We did that for fiscal year 19. We reduced.
But we still have more money, so we could reduce assessments some more. I mean, that's an option that the Finance Commission could decide to do rather
yes.
than this. I'm not suggesting it's the right option.
Yes, it is.
I'm just trying to get our options in place.
Sure, it is an option. When we budget how much we're going to do per year, we take that into consideration. Our fees are very low compared to other states currently on the mortgage side. And if we continue lowering them, at some point we will devalue the license in Texas, which the industry doesn't want us to do either. So that is a consideration.
So Paul, your concern's not this contribution. It sounds like your concern's more, why do we keep accumulating reserves?
I'm not sure what my concerns are. I'm just trying to understand what our options are.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than the fund was created when the CAB statute was passed, and one of the provisions under the CAB statute, the payday loan statute, was that the payday lenders would contribute. Help me, Leslie, make sure I get this right. Payday lenders would, for each license, contribute an amount of money to the fund for consumer education. And so that was where the fund came from. And before that, there was no fund. And so that's been the source of the funds. And as our CAB license numbers have gone down, I assume that the contributions from the CABs has gone down too. And so our ability to fund the consumer education through the TIFI fund, it left alone without any other contributions, would go down as well. And so, you know, we might all be able to agree that consumer education is a good thing. And so I'm just trying to get my head around, when we make a decision about what we're going to do, understand that this is funding creep, if you will. We went from a statutory thing for a limited thing, and now we're coming up with another source of funds. And I just want to make sure that the commission, when it makes a decision, understands what its options are and makes a conscious decision among those options that this is what we want to do for good and sufficient reasons. That's, Vincent, that's best I can do.
So what I'd like to do is walk through the plan that we had given you and tell you where we are with that and what those options that we have come up with are. But first I'll answer your question, certainly.
I'm not totally familiar, although I've sat here for a year and a half. Mm-hmm. This comes up every so often, and I don't sit on the board. The grant program is the TIFI grant program. Is it completely separate from the FSASA? I'm just looking at I'm looking at how you the grant on page.
Hold on. You're in the grant report. You're in the grant report.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. Splits out where the money is being allocated. Mm-hmm. So you've got the grantees that are receiving money, and 48% is going to the FSASA.
What page?
On page 5, sorry, bottom left, the circle. And I'm understanding that we get grants from the TIF fund. Am I incorrect?
That's not where the money's going, no. That's just some of the participation kind of.
So this is strictly participation. So we're giving out $250,000 a year roughly then in grants?
Every other year.
Every other year.
And there's,
Then if I go back to the page, forgive me for just being a total novice, but I'm trying to understand this. Page 21, there's a give or take $6 million in the fund.
In the fund,
and we're giving away $250,000 every other
year, which begs the question of why aren't we giving away more, which is a conversation. We're going there.
We're going there.
We just haven't gotten there yet.
Okay, and then my last question, which I could ask later, but since I'm talking now, I'll just ask. Every other year we make these decisions, this board does. Is it done once every other year? What's the process? How do people apply? How do they know about it? Because in looking at it, it's not a very large group and not a very large sum of money to move the needle on education.
Correct.
That's my opinion.
Understand.
I'm looking at it. I see where it works. Easter Seals is going to go do something great with that $33,000 split over 2 years. But my question is $33,000 for 2 years. I know people that have very small, very effective local nonprofits that touch 60 people and make a difference in their lives. I'm just curious, how do they find out about it? How often do they apply? Is it only done once every 2 years? What's the general process?
Yeah. And we can either talk, probably that's best to talk about now. Juan can talk about it.
Whenever you all want, I'd just like to leave today.
No. Juan, would you come up and just give us just a quick overview of the process as it has been to date?
And just so you know, we did have on the agenda to do a report. It was just probably not in the best order, given our conversation now on this agenda item.
And this is, I think it's a good thing to go over now, and bearing in mind that the fund started small, and it started with certain parameters, which may grow in the future.
With
$6 million,
you can do something good.
Yes, I agree.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Finance Commission, commissioners. My name is Juan Garcia. I am the director of the TV program. And the question I believe you asked is, why are we only giving $250,000? Is that, and why can't we give more?
In general, I want to have a process.
Or the process.
Oh, okay.
He wants a whole process overview.
Okay. So what we've typically done, this now we are currently in the third cycle. What the report or the numbers you were quoting from this binding report is from the second cycle. At the time this grant was started, there wasn't enough funds to distribute. And so I believe this board, or some of you that were here then, decided to go with $250,000 over a two-year period.
I need to interrupt you right there for just a minute. Let me go back to some history. Because the program by statute is an endowment fund. And so an endowment fund is meant to be established, and that it has some permanence.
And
you have a baseline. You have a baseline. You fund into perpetuity. You know, you fund for the future. And so you're trying to live off of earnings.
Right.
And so as we began the process, and the Finance Commission in this building across the hall, I have strong memories. Lori, you're there. Paul is there. We spent a lot of time talking about what does this look like and where do we go into the future and how do we establish this endowment fund. And so we seeded it, our agency did, with some lawsuit settlement proceeds. But, yes, the CABS began funding it. And at that time, we talked about, yes, we're going to administer a grant program. We're going to provide money to help educate consumers. Their priorities, which are mentioned in the report, Juan can get to, and he can talk about process. I'm just going to kind of give the background. And then, you know, how are we going to look at the administration of it? And at that time, it was important. I mean, we're regulators. We're not full-time. Juan does a lot of the grant stuff, but, you know, we were not running a grant cycle continuously. And so, and given we wanted to make the money, the grant sizes to be sufficient enough so that it made a difference to the organizations that get that we thought it every other year was an appropriate cycle for that. So those decisions were made and some of the priorities back in 2012 when the program was established. And now I'll go to Juan for process.
So one more thing I will add is, as you look at these names, they're not the big, you know, kind of like the big brand names.
Right.
So the Red Crosses of the world. And
Goodwill.
Other than Goodwill, thank you. All of those guys, they have name recognition. And so whether TIFI participates or not, they're going to get their funds. And so I think what this board has historically looked at those underrepresented, and not just grant programs, but also from areas that normally wouldn't get it.
By the way, I love that. I saw that and I thought you're picking groups that are going to move the needle within their world.
Right.
So not just throwing some money on top of somebody's giant general fund.
That, yes, sir. That's correct. So the, you know, then again, I know you're from Houston. The Houstons of the world, there's plenty of money there, per se. But you talk about a city like Brownsville, which is, you know, way down.
The hometown of somebody sitting here.
Maybe, maybe not. I may know a little bit about that. It truly is a competition for dollars because there's only so many to go around. Or maybe somewhere like El Paso, even though it's a big city, they also have those challenges. And so what the Grant Advisory Committee, through the Audit Committee, has done in the past is look at those organizations that normally wouldn't be asked to sit at the table, so to speak, and get some funding. And while certainly $33,000 may not be a lot for a Red Cross or maybe even a Goodwill, I can guarantee you for somebody like the First Light Community Foundation, that certainly goes a long way. And so, again, what we're looking at now is this fund is growing, and as Commissioner Pettyjohn said, the ultimate goal of the endowment is to sort of, I always say, sort of live off the land. And I think that this board, because the fund has not been there just yet, they have, and I'm not trying to put words in the Audit Committee's mouth, please jump in, they have limited the amount to where they get to that point. And so we've worked very closely with the Texas Treasury Safekeeping Trust Company to make sure that we're monitoring the funds, but also to make sure that once we get to a certain threshold where you guys feel comfortable enough, then you can begin to award more funds and maybe more with more frequency.
That's a fabulous explanation, and the only thing I would state, and I know that our chairman knows this, is that while Houston does have lots of money in it just by virtue of its size, there are also a much greater number of really small nonprofits that just get ignored because they're not big enough and all the big guys suck all the money out.
That's correct.
So I would submit to you there are probably a lot of really worthy groups in Houston.
Well, part of the challenge has been to get the word out that this money is available. There are grants available.
That was one of my questions was what are you doing to get that out there?
So what we've done in the past is partner with nonprofit organizations that have a bigger platform, either through social media, their websites, and we send a press release that we've shared with this group in the past, and we say the period of participation period is open. Here's our link. Go to our website and submit an application.
And that'll be 2 years from now, next time?
We're getting ready to start. You know, I know we're putting closer to the second. We're on the third, and so Commissioner Pettyjohn and I were talking. We're about to get ready for the fourth one.
Starting in the spring. Yeah. We'll start off.
I have no more questions. Again. That's really great.
And by the way, I just want to say Harris County does have a grant.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw it.
Okay.
Is the amount that the CABs submit each time, is that in statute, that dollar amount?
Yeah, $200. And then I guess since we're on this topic, before we go back to you, since we've put G sort of and F kind of there, intersect each other, two comments I wanted to make with respect to TIFI is now that we have gotten our feet underneath us, so to speak, and we've gone through a few grant cycles, you only learn from experience, which we have done, and we are trying to parlay off existing things that are successful and working to enhance and grow those. I have two suggestions with respect to tracking and reporting that I think would be very helpful to all the commission members. The first one is there's two charts I would love to see before we, you know, encounter our next grant cycle, and there's simple information you can get on the internet. One is I would love to see the low to mod income Texas map so that we can make sure that we are concentrating our financial efforts in the areas of greatest need. So we might be able to overlay where we've granted based on that low to mod income map. That would be item number one, especially with financial literacy being the goal. And then secondly, there's also a credit score map that's readily available online for Texas. And I would love to be able to see the areas of greatest detrimental credit scores be the area of focus for the education in the literacy program. So those two pieces of information I think would really enable us to better direct grant efforts and outreach to areas we might not be touching that are of need, if that makes sense. And happy to discuss it afterwards.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, all good points.
Okay.
I think y'all are going to.
So now,
I want to answer his question.
Well, no, I know. I'm not sure Paul's question did get answered.
No, I'm going to answer it, but or this question.
But we have more information.
He did want more. He's fine. He's happy.
I do want to answer your question about what else is on the menu. So, as you stated, licensing fees could be lowered more. We could continue waiving thrift assessments. So for fiscal year 19, what we've budgeted is 13% to 14% licensing reductions in the renewal fees. And, of course, renewal is coming up November to December. For fiscal year, we could do that further. As I said, there's some question about at what point are you devaluing the Texas license. For fiscal year 19, we've budgeted to waive half of the fourth quarter assessment for the thrifts. As we go through the year, we will be looking to see if we are comfortable further down the road perhaps waiving that whole fourth quarter, but we need to make sure that we need to analyze that as we go through the year. But yes, those are two potentials. Additionally, we have some vacancies. If we can fill all of our vacancies throughout the year, those won't happen in one day either, but if we can start filling vacancies, that certainly is a good way to work on those cash reserves. And we have four postings now. We will have some more throughout the year. So those are items we are looking at very preliminarily, a couple of initiatives that we would need to come back and amend the budget, and that would use some of those reserves. But I can't say yet whether those will, in through our due diligence, whether we will feel that those are worthy of bringing back to you all for a budget amendment or not. But we're working on a couple of those. So big ticket items, they're not many, but those are some that we are doing and we plan to continue doing, and those would be helpful in the reserve piece as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Recognize that I am on the audit committee and I get to ask questions.
Just going to ask for more.
How did you determine whether this donation would be $750,000, $500,000, $1 million?
The amount, if the goal is to get us to 6 months now, if that's the Finance Commission's wish, then that really the full amount that we would need immediately would be $1.5 million. But we really looked at that and felt like that we do have other options of ways that we want to work down those funds, and we don't want to just put it all to TIFI. And so $750 sounded like a starting place. You all may want less. You may not want more. You may not want none. But it sounded like a medium place to start. So,
And I assume the $750 would go toward the endowment per se. It's not like the $750 is going to be distributed next cycle. Correct?
Correct.
Thank you.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Well,
why don't we put him on the audit committee?
There could come a time when we get the base amount in the endowment to a certain size that we might spend what would otherwise be called principal to have larger or more grants. I mean, that's
a
decision for us.
Immediate
But
Paul's correct. The Finance Commission really administers TIFI.
Yes, this is our fund.
We can decide at the appropriate time how much to give each year or every other year during the grant cycle. That can vary. It has been determined the $250 based on the revenue that was being generated. But it as more money has gone into it, we can certainly, as a commission, grant more money out in each cycle.
So it's whatever wish you guys.
Yeah, we would be expecting to bring a motion, an agenda item, probably June or August. I can't remember exactly the date. When y'all will decide how much money you wish to award in the next cycle.
Any more questions? Okay. Do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending's contribution of $750,000 to the Texas Financial Education Endowment Fund?
Yes.
So moved.
Can I just make a comment?
Absolutely.
That should have read the audit committee.
Oh, the audit committee.
Yes.
I messed up, too.
No, that's okay.
The audit committee.
I still move.
Okay, thank you, Vince.
And
is there a second?
I'll second that.
A second by Stacy. Any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it, and the motion passes.
There being no further business, this meeting of the audit.
We need to go.
I skipped one.
That's okay.
Oh.
I sort of thought.
Well, we sort of covered
okay.
it, but they have more.
A report on the activities relating to the Texas Financial Education Endowment Fund. Leslie, do you have, or Juan?
I'm going to give that report. Thanks.
I'll briefly go over it. Good morning again. My name is Juan Garcia. I'm the program director for the TIFI grant program. What you have in front of you on page 46 is a report for the third grant cycle. And the way we've laid these out is we give you a short summary at the beginning of how much was awarded, how much has been distributed in the first 6 months. And then we dive in a little deeper to tell you a little bit about the program, because I know these reports come to you every 6 months or so. And so I think, at least for us, it's helpful to keep the focus on what these programs are all about. And then we break it down on halfway through the page and tell you what, for that particular 6 months, their program activities were, what their major achievements were, and what are some of their biggest challenges. And I'd be happy to answer any questions on that particular report.
I would like to see, when you list these recipients,
yes, sir,
that you show the major area of their coverage their footprint, whether it's a city or a county or an area.
And some do. I was going to make the same mm-hmm. comment. Some do and some don't. For example, like if you look at the second one, the BFCC, it says Rio Grande Valley. But if you look at, you know, one of the other ones, like CTL, it doesn't. So it's just, if in that first paragraph it could just state the geographic location, that would be helpful.
We'll certainly do. And so if there's no other questions, I'd like to move to the report that I handed to you this morning, the bound report. And what you have here, a summary of the second year cycle of the report. While I'll not go over the entire report for time's sake, I do want to point out that on page 11, I just briefly want to touch on this. These are true testimonials from the individuals who you guys have awarded funds to. And so this is their own words. We didn't tweak any of the grammar or anything like that. It is written in their own words, and they talk about how the TP program, in this case TSHAC, how they've been impacted by the money through financial education in their lives. And so this is something that all of you should be very proud of. Although it is a small amount per se, it's truly making a great impact in these people's lives.
No, it's a great report, and thank you for putting it together. I know that everyone worked hard on it, and the testimonials are nice. It's wonderful to see that people really are benefiting, individuals.
Well, I just want to go on the record and say Deandra Sullivan, the grant coordinator, put this together, and I think she did a really phenomenal job.
It's a very, very nice report. Thank you.
If there's no other questions. Then.
And I would just add one closing comment about that. I appreciate the work that Juan and Deandra have really put into this. But the linkage, when you look at the financial education and the empowerment of our citizenry, for Texas citizens that are empowered through this program, that continues to elevate and produce, I think, you know, it supports our overall economic goals as a state, and it supports economic prosperity, because all of these things work up together to, I think, help ensure the success of Texas. And so thank you for your support on TIFI and the work that we do.
All I got.
Thank you.
Thanks, Juan.
Okay, now, I don't think there are any other questions, comments. There being no further business, the meeting of the Audit Committee of the Finance Commission of Texas is now adjourned. The time is
9:53.